Next time in Studio 360.
Hi, it's Carrie Bradshaw.
Sarah Jessica Parker on Sex, the City, and, well, what else is there?
I'm getting married. To myself. Oh, and I'm registered at Manolo Blahnik.
Sarah Jessica Parker, next time in Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC.
So thanks. Bye.
Good afternoon, WFYI Indianapolis, HD2 The Point. My name is Kobe. Time is 5 o'clock. Stick around. Film Sociology with WFYI's very own film guru, Matt Soci, is coming up next. Right here on 90.2 The Point.
This is WFYI HD2 Indianapolis, The Point.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soci!
No, that's Matthew Soci.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soci.
Film lovers, welcome to Film Sociology, film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Keep playing that a little bit more. That's kind of nice. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Working the board for me, a gentleman who I should congratulate publicly. Not only has he graduated from college, but he graduated right into a job. Don't ever do that. not this job, but a job here at WFYI, Kobe Slagle.
Oh, hello, hello.
Oh, hi, Kobe.
Hi, Matt. It is so good to be here.
More on that in
much
another
later,
show.
Because we are, if anything else, Film Sociology is pro the room. We'll just leave it at that. Kobe, do you recognize the music that's being played?
I do not, but I like it.
It's Curtis Mayfield. It's the instrumental version of Freddy's Dead from Superfly. Yeah, you're gonna break. Well, you've produced before, but we're gonna have to break you in to the film sociological world deeper than you already are. It's terrible.
This it's terrible, man.
I know. But. All right, we should be having Mike Perry sitting in again as soon as he gets off the treadmill. I don't want the show to get in the way of physical wellness. It's all right. Now, the question is, will we be discussing Shrek Forever After or Shrek the Final Chapter or Shrek 4 or whatever the hell you're calling it? In fact, what was it over here? Yes, Ben Benjamin from Indianapolis asked, really, do you need to talk about Shrek? Well, no, we don't need to talk about Shrek because, well... The one screening we had, I was working at the Broad Ripple Art Fair, so I did not see that. And joining us now, fresh off the treadmill, it's his version of living six blocks from the NBC studios, Mike Perry.
Hello, everybody.
You look good for just getting off working out. You have no glow.
I've kind of built up a tolerance now. Yeah, it's It's not bad. I don't really sweat a whole lot after 20 minutes anymore.
Do you remember what David Ogden Stiers once said? Two things. I don't sweat. I perspire. And secondly, I don't perspire. Thank you, Winchester. All right. Let's give Curtis a rest. And let's talk about a film that I have to address before reviewing it. We had the screening for it last night at 9 o'clock at our friends over in Castleton. And of course it's MacGruber. Why else would you show it at 9 o'clock? And it were midnight screenings of that and Shrek, I know, throughout the city and throughout the country. But, and I'll speak for my friend Ed Johnsonat, who, I wish well, couldn't be here today, but, all of us of the IFJA, the Indiana Film Journalists Association, we received an email notice, basically an embargo about when you could broadcast or post your reviews. And this is fairly common practice when it's a big enough film, a gigantamongous blockbuster, if you will.
Good word.
So how long after the screening are you embargoed?
Well, it depends on the picture. And thank you. I stole that from a theater student. It really retires ginormous, I think.
So, wait, what? That was
gigantamongous.
Gigantamongous. Duly noted.
Okay, thank you. So anyway, we got an email from the PR firm handling MacGruber, and we were told we were going to have a screening Thursday at 9 o'clock. Okay, that's semi-standard practice for certain films, but we were told to not post any reviews or broadcast any reviews until after midnight this morning. So Ed Johnsonat, my colleague at Nuvo, broke this down. Movie starts at 9. Uh-huh. Let's say 90 minutes. 10:30, unless you bring a laptop. And by the way, none of us bring laptops to the movie theater.
That's good.
Yeah, it's very good. That's good. We don't even.
You don't want to be that guy.
We don't want to be that. We couldn't be that guy because they would confiscate it. But secondly, even if you brought a laptop in your car, and then slipped the manager a couple bucks so you could write your review in the lobby, which we don't do. So let's say you have to travel to go home to write another, maximum 30 minutes.
Sure.
And you bang out a masterpiece in the first draft. Well, I do. No, that's not true. But so let's say
setting that bar high, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, that's well when you're my height. Ed made a point of posting his review at 12:01, so
nice.
There's safety, and we don't get sniper shots from the studio executive snipers. We know, but it just we understood. The email, the timing of it was silly, but not nearly as silly as the film we're about to talk about called MacGruber. And yes, it's based on, it's not even a skit. It's a Saturday Night Live moment that's been repeated several times over the last couple of years. Starring and co-written by Will Forte, Kristen Wiig is in it. Is she on your squad?
Not yet, but.
Not yet? You're still working on that?
Maybe on the B team.
B team. We're not going to talk about that now. Ryan Phillippe is in this. Anyway, we won't talk about that either. And doing comedies. Nice things, these guys in comedies. Powers Booth and Val Kilmer.
Now, see, Powers Booth surprised me.
Well, and I read an interview with Will Forte and, of course, my favorite source for information here, The Onion. And, Booth has always wanted to do a comedy. So bully for him to get in
all
this.
Right.
And it's the perfect kind of comedic role, the general, the big guy. So, and this is directed by Jorma Taccone, who's a regular director on Saturday Night Live. And give it a listen. Give it a listen.
Load it up.
He's the world's deadliest villain.
Я попрошу.
Sorry.
He's ruthless.
No speak Russian.
Yep.
And brilliant.
Straight flush.
Damn it!
I'm going to turn Washington, D.C. into a pile of ash.
He's known only as Dieter. And until now, he's been unstoppable. What the world needs is a hero who's so top secret, we don't even know his full name.
Hello, MacGruber.
Don't worry, this is just like Nicaragua.
I got to talk in Nicaragua.
This is nothing like Nicaragua.
My name is MacGruber, capital M. A, C, capital G, R, U, B, E, R! Tiger!
Get behind him! Oh my God, is he dead?
Yes, he's dead.
Don't worry, we got your back. We're only 7 blocks away, so if anything goes down...
7 blocks?
Okay, you got me. About 20 blocks.
Get ready for the best action.
Just do exactly as I say.
I mean comedy. I mean action comedy of the decade. On May 21st.
I'm a virgin.
Not for long.
MacGruber and his team will rid the world of evil once and for all.
I cannot wait to cut off your and shove it in your
MacGruber.
MacGruber, coming to save the world May 21st.
Where have you been?
I just took an upper decker in the master bathroom.
Upper decker?
Guess where you take a number two in the water tank and not in the bowl. You look great.
TMI, dude. TMI.
I'm not going to ask any. We're not going to delve into that. Not in this group. Certainly not. Okay, before I give the review, a couple of notes here. Oh, by the way, oh, this is from you, Mike. Dude, so sorry. Does your brain hurt much? No, I'm fine. Thank you. I know you're having. Stan from Indianapolis asks, why? The only
he wants to know.
This was the There was only one SNL related film that was worth something. Paraphrasing. Stewart Saves His Family. The rest are 2-hour versions of 12-minute skits that stop being funny about 3 minutes in. Can you think of the last 12-minute skit on Saturday Night Live?
They all seem like 12.
They seem like 12. They're not 12. They're a little shorter. But I understand your sentiment, Stan, who also adds, now The Hangover, that was a really good film. No sarcasm there. Mm. It was surprisingly good. Although, let's see, over here... Yes, David wants to know from Indianapolis. David from Indians. Let us know if it makes The Hangover look like Beaches. I don't remember crying during The Hangover, so that's all
right. Or
the
sequel, of course, Sons of Beaches.
Oh, wow. That's why you're here, sir. The endorphins from working out are just kicking in.
Yep. I'm up now, man.
Jason from Indianapolis makes a good point, and this is kind of what I was referring to off air. I saw the R-rated trailer for MacGruber. That's Red Band for the rest of us. And honestly, it wasn't bad. Stop laughing. The regular trailer that made the movie look terrible. Really terrible. Not terrible. Same with Kick-Ass, which he's correct. He's correct on that. And Josh from Indianapolis writes, nothing can be worse than Will Smith's Karate Kid, since when did Ralph come from Compton? Well, Ralph Macchio's not in this one, but I understand what he's saying. Okay. First thing to think about, don't think of this as a Saturday Night Live skit. And like I said, it's not even a skit. It's 30 seconds. I think with Betty White hosting, it was a minute, maybe two. This is more of a send-off of the action movies of the 80s. And yes, because MacGruber looks like MacGyver with the mullet hair and the sporty car with the tape deck that you keep taking in and out. Like Saturday Night Live, there are certain jokes that they almost run into the ground, like the tape deck. And by the way, yes, listening to crap rock for a busy world from the 70s and 80s, that's funny. Bleak Street is funny. I got it. Broken Wings in a sex scene in two different scenes, I got it. It's funny. Let's move on. Okay. Now, that being said, it helps that it's also R-rated, and it's not under the Lorne Michaels must be PG-13, so more people can see it and complain about it. There is some stuff that, well, I can't really describe, and for good reason. You get to see more of Will Forte than you ever would, including Mrs. Forte, and you won't eat celery for a long, long time.
Oh, man.
Yeah, but I think it had to be at times this crude, but also very funny. One of the things that they do a few times is blowing his cover. Think of every Bruce Willis film from 1985 or 88 until about 2000. You know, obviously even in the first Die Hard when talking with Alan Rickman and things like that. Val Kilmer, nice to see him in a comedic role as the bad guy whose last name, well, it's a C word. And that joke almost gets run into the ground. Although there's a recurring theme of MacGruber wanting to do unspeakable things to Val Kilmer's character, and well, it sort of pays off and it doesn't. I'll just leave it at that. But
so is this a better comedic performance from Kilmer than, say, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang?
No. He just gets to be the villain, the action villain in this one. Although it's kind of a nice, weird little homage, since of course he was in one of the better spoof films from the 80s,
Top Secret.
You didn't speak along, Kobe.
Wow.
You got to go rent
born
that.
Yet.
Wow.
He wasn't born yet.
Yeah, but he's the study of the classics or near classics or neoclassics. This is, if you're going to sit at that desk, you got to. I expect to hire of you, sir.
Okay.
Okay. No worries. You got plenty of time.
So now you have your homework assignment for the weekend.
Yes.
You go find
yes.
Top Secret.
Because okay. I've handed the list to other producers, and I just got blank stares. I know you don't have that in you. All right. So anyway, this actually turned out to be surprisingly enjoyable, surprisingly crude. I said it. And, I enjoyed myself. So, yeah, even though it was at 9 o'clock, it did not necessarily mean it was a bad film, because I know that happens sometimes right. If they don't, if they don't, or otherwise they don't screen it at all. So, overall, if you enjoy good adult spoofing, yeah, this is for you. So this is what I think of MacGruber.
Yes, 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 yes.
So is the Target Lady movie coming out this year or next?
Salt?
No. Kristen Wiig's Target Lady.
Oh, that? Yeah. I'm not sure.
Sorry, too vague a reference.
No, you're fine. Kristen Wiig's very good as the girl with her giant
I like
feathered
Kristen,
hair.
Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But she's just like everywhere now.
Well, she's working.
Yeah.
She's one of those who can, she can kind of, I most notably think of her even, and it's a blip of a role in Adventureland.
Yeah.
And, anytime I couldn't, mix basketball with film, she hops off the bench. Bangs a couple threes and sits down. I mean, yeah. That's what she does. The Robert Horry of basketball
she was
ladies.
Great in Whip It.
Yeah, she's very good in that as well. So, yeah, I think she's got a good track record. Okay. I didn't see Shrek, so we're not going to talk about that. So,
good call.
Well, I don't
be
that
guy.
I don't want to be that guy. Mr. Perry, have you caught up on stuff since last week?
Since last week's episode, I went to see The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And, Loved it.
Yes.
Now I'm anxiously awaiting the upcoming American version.
Why?
Just to see how bad they'll screw it up.
Wow, that's a lot of focus.
Yeah, but some of the names that are campaigning for the role, have you read?
No, but go ahead.
You got Ellen Page, who I was thinking of when
Honest
I was watching
the
movie.
No.
And
only if she kills somebody with a hamburger phone.
And Natalie Portman.
Oh. And who?
Natalie
Ooh.
Portman.
Steady, Kobe. Down boy.
And I can see either of them. I think Paige may still come off looking a little bit too young for this. But
yeah, because she almost
especially
says
especially since they're talking about Brad Pitt for the male lead.
Ah.
But
we'll see.
But that said, it's one of the better movie mysteries I've seen in a long, long time. And
I agree.
It kept me guessing till close to the end as to what the actual deal was. And that's all you really want out of a movie mystery.
Yeah.
And, once you get past the subtitles, and I know a lot of people have issues with subtitles.
That baffles me. None of you fine listeners, of course.
I mean, but, after a few minutes, I hardly notice them. They're kind of like subliminal translation to me after a while.
And fascinating chemistry between the two characters.
Oh, yeah. I mean... It's a little rough in places. I actually had someone ask me, is it okay to take the kids? No.
Oh, my God. What?
No.
Who asked this? I want names. Really?
I'm not going to give her up, but, someone this week
God.
Asked me if it was...
somebody who's taken a kid to grown-up foreign films?
Oh, this is not the one you want to take the kids to.
And you know what? You mentioned Ellen Page. I think after Hard Candy, she would want to do a couple of scenes in this film.
Well, that
Both
American
ends.
Crime, I mean, she...
Gosh, that's right.
I mean, the poor girl's gotten beat up in a lot of films. And,
not to mention Whip It.
Yeah.
And that was fun.
So, but I did thoroughly enjoy the movie from beginning to end. It's 2.5 hours, but it really didn't feel like it.
Right.
It just kept moving. And I'm kind of anticipating an American version. Now, I just hope they keep the edge that the original has.
One would only hope. And the rumor I, of course, reported was, because it has to be true if I report it. No, it's not true. But David Fincher is supposed to be directing it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you got a good guy working or a good lady director, then then you'll pique my interest in that case. So if Fincher sticks with it. Now, of course, all these girls, women, I should say, that don't get this role, they're also going to be begging to be in Transformers 3. I know that's been... That's been brought up a few times.
I hear
times.
Betty White's got the inside track on
Yes, Betty White's got the inside track on everything. Everything.
Now, the other movie I saw last weekend was Robin Hood.
How'd you like Gladiator? In tights. the first to say that.
It was a nice big pile of meh. I mean, it's...
Wow.
Hey, Robin Hood has dad
issues. Settle down, Mike.
Robin Hood has dad issues in this one. Wasn't I right?
Oh, absolutely, you were right. And but yet, I forced myself into the theater to see it anyway. I can't believe I'm saying this. I liked the Kevin Costner version better.
Uh-oh.
By a long shot.
Oh,
better.
If I believed in the concept, turn in your hipster douchebag card.
There's just not a whole lot here. I mean, it doesn't do anything to add to the legend. Any form of humor that previous incarnations of the story have taken are all gone.
You mean the not so merry men?
The least merry men you will ever see in your life.
But you have,
although they have a couple of moments.
And
the,
you have
the
Mark
guys.
Addy. You have Mark Addy, who I enjoy as Friar Tuck.
But then, you know, every time, you know, Crow walks into the same scene with them,
buzzkill.
It's like the teacher just walked into the room and
yeah, calm, it, like, well, especially when he introduces Marion to the guys.
Yeah, it's just so not fun. It's just not a fun movie. And even with a serious topic, you want to have some fun in the theater. And there's just not – even the battle scenes had a been there, done that feel to it. I mean, the closing climactic battle looks right out of the Saving Private Ryan playbook.
Yeah.
And I just – I was very disappointed in it.
Yeah.
That's about the kindness I can be.
And it's reflective of a lot of people. I mean, it didn't topple Iron Man 2, and it's not doing well. Not that
it's
numbers,
doing well worldwide.
Numbers equal. What?
It's doing well worldwide.
Oh, of course. It'll make its money worldwide. Yeah. But
they set up a sequel that I would be surprised
if it gets
ever
made.
Yeah. It would be like The Golden Compass. It would just surprise
boy.
Me. And I enjoyed The Golden Compass.
That's The Golden Compass is okay.
But, yeah, I'd be surprised if this sequel gets made.
Well, we shall see in this case. Kobe, you all right over there?
I'm good.
See anything new?
Good. New? No. You have my interest peaked with MacGruber.
Well, I think you already had that.
Looking to see that. Looking to see Iron Man. Still haven't seen that.
Okay.
Just last weekend at the Red Rebel Art Fair, me and Steve were talking about Matchstick Men.
We'll
went
get
home
to
and
that.
Watched Matchstick
Let's get
Men.
To that. We'll get to that a little later on in the show, but we'll address that. Okay. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to talk about two films that got Oscar nominations that are on DVD. And yeah, we'll talk a little bit about Matchstick Men and some other miscellaneous titles along the way. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs.
You know what I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So, do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store.
And the video store is open. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. And I'm also on Facebook. And the show is available as a podcast around lunchtime on Monday. Mike Perry, Kobe Slagle hanging out with me on today's show. And I want to start the DVD releases with a film. It received two Academy Award nominations, and it never came to Indianapolis. And this is one of those little frustrating aspects of the job. Yeah. And as a member of the IFJA, the Indiana Film Journalists Association, don't snickers, Kobe. It's what we are. And we're trying to make sure we films like this don't miss. And we kept waiting for it. We'd heard about it, and the fact that it didn't arrive, and then it received two nominations, one for its screenplay, one for Woody Harrelson and Best Supporting Actor. And we thought, oh, now it'll arrive.
Not so much.
No, it didn't. So it's finally out on DVD this week. It does star Woody Harrelson, Ben Foster, as two army men, and their job is to inform the next of kin that their loved one was killed in combat. So I always think of the scene in Saving Private Ryan. And I know there are other military films where the two men come to the door. Well, those two characters finally get their story told. Foster plays a soldier relocated, reassigned to this duty. Harrelson plays the hardened veteran who's done this for a long time. Jenna Malone, Samantha Morton, and Steve Buscemi round out the cast as well. Here's the trailer.
You do not speak with anybody other than the next of kin. No friend, no neighbor, or mistress.
We're racing Fox, CNN, what have you. We got to be first.
Avoid physical contact. In case you feel like offering a hug or something, don't.
I'm not going to be offering any hugs, sir.
Amazing grace, how sweet a sound that saved.
Are you Mrs. Peterson?
How did it happen?
He was killed in action yesterday. That's all the information we have now, ma'am.
Okay, thanks. I know this can't be easy for you. Goodbye.
But now I found I was blind.
We walk into these people's lives. We don't know anything.
Trust me. You don't want to know.
They're human beings. They're just people. They're not like you.
You gotta wake up. You're in the army.
Yeah, I know. I gave blood to the army. I fought!
I was raised that tall.
If I can do anything.
My heart to fear.
We were thinking about getting some pizza.
Raise my fears.
You're my buddy, aren't you? We've been to hell and back together.
What happened to you guys? I wouldn't worry about it. We do all our own stunts.
But now I see.
Well, I said there'd be days like these.
I was blind, but now I see.
Woody Harrelson was interviewed last week, and it was a command performance, command archive interview from Fresh Air, which mm-hmm. you can hear on WFYI. And one of the things that was talked about with this film, and it interested me from an acting standpoint, was the fact that there are four scenes where the Woody Harrelson character and the Ben Foster character go to the door, and the actors don't know what's going to happen. They know their lines, and they know what they're supposed to say, but they have no idea how the actors are going to react. And
nice.
That, yeah, from an actor and a directing standpoint, that intrigues me a great deal. And it works effectively with Steve Buscemi's character. I don't want to give it away. And then the Samantha Morton character, who winds up having a connection with the Ben Foster character. I think you kind of know where that's going to go. Harrelson got a nomination and deserved it, as the screenplay, I think, because these two, not stock characters, but that line of duty in the military is intriguing. And I thought, is this the only thing that these two guys do? The answer is yes. And the fact that they're both very hard-shelled veterans from different wars, from different combat experience, butting heads with each other and trying to keep this strong facade. Ben Foster's somebody I've just started to notice him over the last few years. I know he did 6 Feet Under. First thing I noticed him in was 310 to Yuma.
Yep.
And I had to suffer with him in watching Pandorum and Hostage. But he's quite good in this, and he holds his own against Harrelson, who can be at times, you know, a force of nature on screen.
Ben Foster can be a pretty intense guy on film. He certainly was in 310 to Yuma.
Yeah, that was really good.
Probably not so much in X-Men 3, but...
Oh, gosh, he was in that, was he? I forgot he was also one of the kids in Liberty Heights.
Ooh.
Long time. Long back time. Yes. But they bounce off each other really well. Samantha Morton's solid as usual. Buscemi's two moments are very effective. Very character-driven show. Not making a statement about what is going on. It's just the job of these two guys. And, of course, from last year being the year of the Hurt Locker, this film is in pretty good company. So it didn't come to Indianapolis theaters. Now's the time and go rent it or check it out on Blu-ray.
Yes, 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 yes!
Another film with two Academy Award nominations, both in the acting category, is Clint Eastwood's latest Invictus, which stars Morgan Freeman as Nelson Mandela. He got an acting nomination for this. Free from prison, elected president, and he's going to support the all-white rugby team, headed by Matt Damon, who also got a nomination for this. And his blonde hair. And, well, again, it's directed by Clint Eastwood and it's from Warner Brothers. Give it a listen.
I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul.
Today, President Mandela takes office in Pretoria. Balancing black aspirations with white fears.
Remember this day, boys. This is a day our country went to the dogs.
Brothers, sisters, this is the time to build our nation.
All of the whites are cheering for South Africa. All of the blacks are cheering for England. How long before the World Cup?
Don't get your hopes up. We're a damn disgrace.
Been invited to tea.
With who?
The president.
Tell me, Francois, how do we inspire ourselves to greatness when nothing less will do? How do we inspire everyone around us?
What did he want?
I think he wants us to win the World Cup.
This rugby is a political calculation.
It is a human calculation.
According to the experts, we'll reach the quarterfinals and no further.
According to the experts, you and I should still be in jail.
Times change. We need to change as well. We become more than just a rugby team. Did you ever imagine this? How could I? Do you hear? Listen to your country. This is it. This is our destiny. I was thinking about how you spent 30 years in a tiny cell and come out ready to forgive the people who put you there.
I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul.
Well, everything on paper with Invictus reads really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Clint Eastwood, Morgan Freeman, Matt Damon, Morgan Freeman narrating, rugby.
And in the role that some have described as the role he was born to play.
Yes. That's I think first time he's played Mandela?
I think.
It's about time kind of thing. It turns out to be a good film. Not a great film, but a good film. Solid performances from both of them, obviously, and the cast all around. It does feel at times like The West Wing. With Mandela, getting used to the day-to-day office politics and dealing with these decisions that he has to make as far as uniting black and white South Africa. Well, there's not many walking and talking scenes. You know, Clint doesn't quite do that. and, you know, the Damon character trying to get the team up and going and communicating with the kids. There's, you know, the few touching moments where they're teaching the young kids how to play rugby. And it's interesting because I've been a big fan of the 30 by 30 documentary series on ESPN.
Yes.
And I just saw The 16th Man, which is a documentary about this same subject. Yeah. And, you know, same story in an hour, minus the acting and Clint Eastwood directing. The only issue I have with this film is the last 30 minutes, and it's only because the rugby scenes, well, there are times where the ghost of Sam Peckinpah was going to hop out of his grave and say, speed it up. It's a little longer than, say, The Longest Yard, the original, not the god-awful remake. But a lot of slow-mo stuff for the rugby game, and I don't know if this is so American audiences can follow rugby easier, because that's usually not Mr. Eastwood's forte. He's a global filmmaker, I honestly believe, and I don't know. It's just the game footage was a bit of a letdown. So hopefully you can check out the 30 by 30 series. That being said, it's still a good film. I guess I'm a sucker for inspirational sports films, mm-hmm. as long as they're made competently well, and this one is. But it's a good film, not a great film. So this is what I think.
Now that was a good movie.
Okay, moving on. This was a film, I think this was the first week in January that it came out, the drama Extraordinary Measures. And this is starring Harrison Ford, who's also an executive producer on this. So he hid in a refrigerator so he could make this film. You know exactly what I'm talking about. You make one for the studio, you make one for yourself. Mm-hmm. Brendan Fraser is in this as well, Carrie Russell, Jared Harris. Love seeing Jared Harris in anything, really. And it's inspired by a true story. You know, the show is inspired by a true story. Brendan Fraser plays a man who's two of his children have incurable diseases, and he's trying to find a cure. And Harrison Ford plays a gruff, but he's somewhere inside, he's got a creamy nougat center, scientist who's going to help find the cure and finance it. Now, you know, the film kind of came and went at the same time when it opened in January. It kind of got washed over the Oscars.
And considering the amount of promotion it got, because CBS made this film.
Yes, this is CBS Films. This is their inaugural launch into this.
So, you know, you had promos for it in every episode of CSI.
Okay. But, at the very least, the film would be known for one thing, and I think probably one thing only. Go ahead and play it.
I already work around the clock.
Yeah, we feel your pain.
I know. That's probably it. And snark folks everywhere have now posted that on website. And there's dance mixes on YouTube. You know you've done it if you've made a dance mix on YouTube. Hi, Kobe.
that wasn't me, Matt.
Oh, okay. It was the other Kobe Slagle from Indianapolis. That's fine.
Yeah, yeah. God, how many of you are there?
He doesn't die. He multiplies. So we have, it sounds a lot like, well, it sounds like something that could have been on Sunday evenings on CBS back when they were doing the TV movie stuff. So it is kind of TV movie, disease movie material with a better cast. You know, everybody, I mean, mm-hmm. Ford is fine. Nice to see Brendan Fraser in something that's not Furry Vengeance or anything special effects driven, I guess.
But it didn't take him long to go back to the Critters.
Go back into it, I guess. Yeah. And, you know, Carrie Russell has nothing to do as the wife, the capital T, capital W. A little hand-wringing on that.
Yeah, she'll have a full-time gig in the fall again, so that's cool.
That's true. That is true. So, you know, I guess if you like these guys and you want to complete watch their filmography, you can go check that out. But overall, here we are.
I think it's overrated.
Shut up, you!
Okay, two other films that came out on DVD and Blu-ray this week, Valentine's Day and The Spy Next Door. All right, let's move on. I didn't see him. You didn't see him.
I still don't see them.
I'm afraid that I don't think Valentine's Day is not going to have the subtle nuances of Love Actually, and I don't want to see The Spy Next Door because I'm going to have to watch The Karate Kid later this summer. So
yeah,
we will move on. On Blu-ray, this was the old segment, if you own a Blu-ray, I do. Now the question is, would I buy this or would you buy this? On Blu-ray, Carlito's Way. I need to watch that again.
Yeah.
I need to watch it because I think as soon as it came out, a lot of people jumped on it and compared it to Scarface Going Straight or The Godfather 4. Interesting performance by Sean Penn. Lots of Penelope Ann Miller. Nothing wrong with that.
No.
And a fairly effective chase scene. But it's got a couple things that, I mean, and Pacino's fine. I guess I need to watch it again. But it is that storyline, the storytelling that kind of bugs me. And I know a lot of films do this where, you know, the entire film is a flashback until the very end. Yeah, so we'll go back to that. Uh-oh. I don't know if it's on Blu-ray, but it's on DVD. Gamera, the giant monster.
Gamera.
See, I knew you'd know that. So, because you're into... Oh, no, I'm not saying that.
I'm into Mystery Science Theater 3000. They did a great spoof of the film, of several Gamera films.
I was going to say, not the films of Japanese boys in short pants. That's a whole other genre.
Gamera is really neat. He is flying turtle meat. It's great. If you got to watch Gamera, watch the MST 3000.
I highly recommend that. In fact, I think that's on Emma's queue, is one of the Gamera films on Mystery Science Theater. Also, by the way, this week in The Onion, they had a weekly column called A Very Special, which is about, you know, special episodes of TV shows over the years. And this week is Mystery Science Theater. Got to go check that out. Hard Ride to Hell. It's on DVD. And, oh, my goodness, on Criterion Blu-ray, Nicholas Roeg's Walkabout. Really, really good film about an Australian schoolgirl and her brother who get lost from their group and goes on a walkabout with an Aborigine. And visually stunning.
I was going to say, how are the visuals?
Visually stunning, yes.
Because that's what tips it to the Blu-ray for me.
Yeah, and it's a gorgeous film of the Australian outback, but it's also a connecting story between not just brother and sister, but young girl and young man. Mm, yes.
Like Blue Lagoon.
Better, far better, better visuals, better acting, better storytelling all around. And this is the film Nicholas Roeg did before Don't Look Now.
Okay.
Yes. And it's interesting. I just watched a film of his from the 80s, which I had never seen. Do you remember the film Eureka with Gene Hackman?
Yes.
Gene Hackman. Now check out this cast. Gene Hackman, Rutger Hauer, early 80s Rutger Hauer, Teresa Russell. Uh-oh.
Oh.
Yeah, Mickey Rourke, Joe Pesci, Ed Lauder, and it's supposed to be based on a couple of famous people who were Hackman's an old prospector who strikes it rich, and then life just goes downhill from there, and it goes into odd twists and turns in Jamaica where there's voodoo and there's a lot of naked Teresa Russell and just some really odd moments and blowtorch scenes that makes people look like they're wax and. You know, odd film from the same man that gave us Walkabout and Don't Look Now.
Teresa Russell, early in her career, she could not act her way out of a paper bag.
But she was pretty.
But now I've seen her in some recent stuff. Girl learned how to act.
Yeah?
Somewhere along the line, she took some acting classes. She's much better now.
The last two things I remember seeing her in, and they were not showing. Well, she was the mom in Wild Things. Mm-hmm. We will not talk about Wild Things with two men in the room. And Spider-Man 3. She had just a blip role as Thomas Hayden Church's wife. What else has she done recently?
She did Empire Falls, the HBO miniseries.
Oh, that's
and was
right.
Outstanding in that.
That's right. I need to watch that again.
I mean, she was so good, I wasn't convinced it was her at first. I mean, because my impression of Teresa Russell was always, yeah, she's really cute, but she can't act. But in Empire Falls, she kind of turned it around for me. She did a great job in that movie.
So maybe it's the reverse Kathleen Turner.
Maybe.
We'll have to work on that.
Oh, so sad. So
do you remember? Do you remember Whore? Ken Russell's Whore?
No.
Well, now you know.
Now I know.
Okay, we're going to take a short break and chat with Kobe and Mike a little bit more. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Thank you.
We'll play the... Nah, we won't do the guest intro. It's all right. No, 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 no. It's okay. The theme, of course, from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Kobe Slagle is my producer. Mike Perry is my guest. I play the theme from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly because I might as well call this show The Onion Hour because I use so much information from that wonderful website. But every week they also do a subject called Gateway to Geekery, which I highly recommend you looking at. Oh, I look at it every day. But they pick a particular subject, a pop culture icon or subject, and then they recommend what ones you should start watching, Kobe, and then which ones you could advance to and which ones you should not start with. And this week's subject was spaghetti westerns. Love spaghetti westerns.
Yep.
I don't know what that is.
That's why we're here, sir. Spaghetti westerns in the 60s and through the mid-70s were Italian films that were either shot in Italy or Spain. Sometimes they had Italian actors, Spanish actors, German actors. Klaus Kinski did a few of those, and the occasional American actor. And sometimes, and when they became popular and started showing up in the United States, then the U.S. studio started to distribute some of them. And it was pretty cool because it was the flip side to the John Wayne westerns of the 40s and 50s. They were dirty. They were grungier. They were a little revisionist history.
They just sound nasty.
There was no black, there was no white, it was all dingy gray characters. Mm-hmm. And of course this shot the film career of Clint Eastwood into orbit. He did A Fistful of Dollars, which he did on Break from Rawhide, playing the handsome Rowdy Yates. And then of course made the sequel A Few Dollars More with Lee Van Cleef, and then the 1968 masterpiece, well, 66, released in the U.S., I think, in 68, the masterpiece, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, with Clint Eastwood, Lee Van Cleef, and the brilliant Eli Wallach. So now, these were all directed by Sergio Leone, who also gave us Once Upon a Time in the West, mm-hmm. with Henry Fonda, Jason Robards, Charles Bronson, and the visually stunning Claudia Cardinale.
Oh, yeah.
Duck You Sucker, which was later later changed to A Fistful of Dynamite with Rod Steiger and James Coburn. Mm-hmm. Now, there were other directors like Sergio Carbucci, who made Navajo Joe and made Django, which made Franco Nero a mm-hmm. star. And he later did things with Vanessa Redgrave. We'll talk about that later. But anyway, so lots of these films that came out. So there you go. There's
okay.
I've just
yep.
thrown about nine titles at you, and you better start watching. Lee Van Cleef did a number of them.
Yep.
Eli Wallach did films like Ace High, Terrence Hill.
There were the Trinity movies,
yeah. which were... They were kind of the Jackie Chan of the spaghetti westerns, very physical comedy, mm-hmm. Kind of a Mutt and Jeff thing for Terrence Hill, and later did some films in the United States. But
it's always fun watching those movies, picking out who's having their voice dubbed, and
right,
especially with the ones that have a mix of Italian and American actors.
And it was yeah, it was a smart, I think, move because you could have, you know, the film be big in the United States, in Italy, in Germany, in Spain, depending on where the money was, where the actors were from.
Yeah.
Wise move. You know, then you had something like Red Sun, which was an Italian film starring Charles Bronson and Toshiro Mifune and Ursula Andress.
Whew. We just cover the globe with that one.
Pretty much, yeah. And a couple years ago, was it last year, I think? There was an homage to the spaghetti westerns called Sukiyaki Western Django, which had a Quentin Tarantino cameo, and that's all. I need to watch that again. I bought it. I found it at my favorite Half Price Books place called Half Price Books, and it was in the metal tin. It was a used copy of metal tin of Sukiyaki Western Django. I'll have to get that. So, but like Django with Franco Nero, the town was not dusty and dirty. It was muddy. I mean, it was just a cool, dirty, grungy
look. Oh, yeah, the spaghetti
look.
Westerns are not pretty to look at.
They are not. And no. Also, one of the rules they broke prior to the 60s, when there was a gunfight, the shooter and the shootee could not be in the same shot.
Really?
Really. No. Yes, really, Seth Meyers. yeah, I mean, and I remember I think it was like Fistful of Dollars was made in 64. It didn't come into the United States until about 66. And that blew a lot of doors. You know, of course, then we would later have Bonnie and Clyde and a Wild Bunch. But, I mean, these were the films that really spawned the revisionist westerns of the 60s, The Wild Bunch, Little Big Man, mm-hmm. Battle of Cable Hogue. So I think we owe a lot of debt to the spaghetti westerns, not just for westerns, but action films in general. I mean, The Man with No Name, the Clint Eastwood character, I mean, great anti-hero. Great anti-hero. Just a lot of fun. So there you go. There's your homework assignment, sir.
Okay.
So, they tell you, and they said, you know, they always give you an example of where not to start, and this is words to live by, those DVD collections that guarantee 10 to 20 films on 5 discs, because they're usually, usually really bad transfers and not the best visual and sound quality. So
yeah, I have a John Wayne collection that just looks nasty. It's got like 6 movies on 2 discs.
From like the 30s?
Yeah.
Like old Republic pictures.
Well, some of them were some of the Backjack films, too. Like, there's a copy of McClinic in this collection.
That's just
rough to look at.
Yeah. There was a couple of those films. I mean, like Hondo and McClintock that were before they got they cleaned up. Oh, the Sabata films. Sabata was interesting because it was Lee Van Cleef, and then he went to go do the Magnificent Seven ride, so they put Yul Brynner in his place, and then he came back and did the third film. So, interesting stuff. So, spaghetti westerns are cool. Now, Mr. Perry, speaking of westerns, now, and that being said, Colleen from Michigan, she loves John Wayne and has not seen the spaghetti westerns. She's my age, and you're in the same boat with her. nothing against the Duke, and that's a whole different discussion, but it was a needed passing of the torch in the 60s, whether John Wayne wanted to or not.
I would agree with that.
But you said, sir, that you picked up some John Wayne films recently.
Well, I've been collecting quite a number of them lately.
Really?
I have a couple more that I just acquired. I just got the classic North to Alaska with John Wayne and Stuart Granger and Fabian.
Oh, my gosh. I remember, what was worse, him casting his kids or casting pop singers?
I'd say his kids, because really? Patrick Wayne, he may have been easy on the eyes for some of the ladies, but boy, he couldn't act.
He wound up producing as well, didn't he?
Yeah, and his son Michael.
Michael Wayne, that's right. I knew that. Too. So I knew there was that. But I think of Fabian and say Glenn Campbell.
Yeah,
and
Ricky Nelson in Rio Bravo.
He was tolerable, I guess, a little bit.
But. Yeah, he brought the youngsters along to try to drag the kids into the theater to watch the movie with mom and dad in the late 60s, early 70s.
Duke was no fool.
But North to Alaska is a very funny movie. It's one of the comedies set in the Alaskan Gold Rush.
Right. It was fun to see Duke take a breather and do a comedy. I know Donovan's Reef was another one like that. Yep. A manly comedy if there ever was one.
Then I also picked up...
The War Wagon?
The War Wagon.
Sorry, I know this is your bit. I'm just helping
you.
I know.
Now I don't have my paperwork in front of me.
I had a theory that by the mid 60s, with the passing of the torch, and Wayne had to bring in other people so people would come see the films. But I think by the mid 60s through the end of his career, I like the films where he had an equal co-star to bounce off of. And The War Wagon is a great example of that with Kirk Douglas
in this one. The Horse Howard, Soldiers with
Howard
Richard
Keel.
Richard Widmark, The Undefeated with
Rock Hudson, Katharine Hepburn and Rooster Cogburn, which I still think is a better film than True Grit. I know a lot of people don't agree with me, but you know what? Katharine Hepburn is not a whiny Kim Darby.
Right.
She's not. Right. Even Anne Margaret in The Train Robbers. Mm-hmm. All of those films, they have fun together. They bounce off each other very well. And I think War of the Wagons one of the better ones from the late 60s.
And then a few weeks ago, I got Hellfighters.
Oh, my gosh.
Which is a classic. It's about, and kind of timely now, it's about a team of oil fire putter-outers.
Putter-out, that's what they're called.
And based on real people.
The Indianapolis Putter-Outers Department, the IMPOD,
they extinguish oil fires.
Yes.
And it's set in Houston, and they go all over the world putting out oil fires.
And it was always interesting seeing a Duke in a modern film.
Yeah, it was set in modern day at the time. It's got Jim Hutton in it.
Jim Hutton, Catherine Ross.
Catherine Ross, Vera Miles. And a lot of leftovers from the John Ford stock company was in this movie, too. ironically, the week after I got this movie, one of the firefighters whose was based, one of the characters was based on, passed away.
Oh, so we say salute.
So salute. But yeah, if you're looking for a contemporary John Wayne movie, that's probably the best one he ever made. Don't mess with McHugh. And,
oh, I like McHugh.
McHugh's a fine, McHugh, but it's fun watching him
be a 70-year-old Dirty Harry.
Yeah, it's just not a. It's just not a John
and,
Wayne
and
movie.
Brannigan. Brannigan's a little fun.
Brannigan's
him
a little
traipsing
fun.
Through England.
Yeah,
but
it's just not what you expect to see John Wayne in.
Oh, it was. You know, he had to do that. The great legend was that John Wayne turned down Dirty Harry, as did Frank Sinatra, mm-hmm. and yeah, by the 70s. Because he was doing films that were just not quite the same. You know, Cahill, United States Marshal, and the Cowboys. And yes, we all know he dies at the Cowboys. Big spoiler alert. And, you know, train robbers, people weren't seeing him as much. And he finally caved in and did a couple of cop films. And McHugh, which was John Sturgis. And say what you will, it had that cool stunt on the beach.
Oh, yeah.
I think that set a record. I think the car flipped 7 times, if I remember correctly.
On its own merits, McHugh's a great film. As I was watching, I said, John Wayne's in this movie?
Yes. They have no retirement age. I think he was 7, and this was before, I think it was before he had the open heart surgery. But you know,
if he doesn't have a cowboy hat or an army helmet on, it's hard to recognize.
I'm sorry, you say that, and I think of the Green Berets, and that film shouldn't have been made.
Oh, I got that, too, with the helmet. Well, I went for the Jim Hutton combo. But...
What are you, my wife? She also liked Jim Hutton.
But,
okay, but
still.
A pro-Vietnam film in 1968. A pro-war film in 68.
Yeah, I mean, looking back, it was a ballsy move at the time because the war, it was the first Vietnam War movie to be made in the first place. But the war movies that were being made during the period
Not that.
Were anti-war movies.
Huge anti-war films. And because of the Green Berets, it fueled more anti-war films like MASH and Catch-22 and so on and so forth.
But
you've
got David Jansen in it and George Takei is in it.
I wonder what lunch would have been like with George and the Duke. Okay, all right. Let's not forget, his real name is Marion. All right, we've done that joke. So Mr. Slagle, you have any Western background?
In your
film watching repertoire?
I do not, but I will. I'm going to work on the spaghetti western thing now.
It's a good place to start,
yes.
Sir.
Sounds like something I could get into.
I think you will. If you're a strapping young lad who likes to watch men with guns shoot people, and the occasional Italian lass.
And they're campy enough that you can enjoy them on that level, too, if you don't take them too seriously. They're pretty.
But Sergio Leone was a great director. He has one of the best track records when it comes to film quality. I think right up there with John Cazale. As an actor. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
We'll get to that maybe next week. We'll see how it goes next week. Well, let's have some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Mike Perry, Kobe Slagle. You can play the music under it. It's cool. Thank you for sitting in with me, gents.
No problem.
So, until next time, you can go to msoci@wfyi.org if you have a question or a comment. I'm also on Facebook. This show will be available as a podcast Monday. And there you go. So go see a good movie. You deserve it. I'm Matthew Soucy. Thank you for listening. This is Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. You're listening to WFYI HD2 Indianapolis, The Point.
From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Fresh Air.